Donna Yesney's first political act, as she recalls it, was spinning a homemade wheel of fortune at a fundraiser for presidential candidate Henry Wallace when she was 3 years old. From that auspicious beginning, she went on to champion the causes of her time. Civil rights, peace, anti-war, women's rights, gay rights, economic equality, immigrant rights. And at one time or another, she was tapped by Governor Madeline Cunin to run for state office, endorsed by Congressman Bernie Sanders, and just plain ticked off one day presidential candidate Howard Dean. She tells these stories in her new book, Politically Defined, a memoir of an unknown activist. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Donna Yesney to the roundtable this morning. Donna, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
So what brought you to want to tell this story, to write a memoir?
Well, I've spent my entire lifetime defined as a political person, and I've had a lot of unusual experiences. But mostly I wanted to share with people the lesson I've learned, which is that you don't have to be famous to make a difference, and that there are such a tremendous number of issues facing us these days that anyone with the slightest inclination to do something about any one of them really needs to feel confident that there's a way to do that and a place for them to do it.
You write in the book that that awakening really started for you very young. You were young when you started to feel that you'd want to try to make a difference.
That's true. I was fortunate enough to be raised in a politically conscious family. My first political act was actually twirling a wheel of fortune at a fundraiser for Henry A. Wallace, who was a presidential candidate of the Progressive Party back in 1948. That started me off, and I continued onward and upward, and it just always was something that made sense to me. I grew up with a very strong feeling that in a democracy, we all have a responsibility to serve in it some way, and it's just a question of figuring out what fits you best. And for me, the political arena seemed to make sense.
Given that you were a Vermont resident, what was it like to be politically active in that state, which is often known for its political activism?
Well, there certainly were many opportunities, but a lot of them were opportunities that could have been taken anywhere, because while Vermont may have done some things before other states, there was always a first time. And I'm thinking of things like the work I did to achieve payment by Medicaid for medically necessary abortions for low-income women, or, for example, when I was particularly active in the Vermont Bar Association in the 1980s, there were no women judges in Vermont, and that was something that we had to fix. So I chaired the Judicial Selection Committee at that time, and now we're just like the best of states with a good percentage of women on the bench.
The rungs on the ladder that you took are really fascinating. First, you were a political operative, you're later a social worker, and then a lawyer. Talk about that progression and how natural that was for you.
Yeah, it seemed to make a lot of sense. I mean, I was caught up in the McCarthy presidential campaign when I was still in college, just short of graduation in 1968. And after working on the campaign for the better part of that year, I realized that I had been able to do some important work, that I seemed to have the skills, nothing magical, just organizational skills that would be useful in the political arena. And I knew, I think from then on, that this was going to be a major part of my life. So as I progressed to New York City and then up to Vermont in 1970, I was always looking for things to do, but also I had a bit of a compulsion, I have to confess. I couldn't walk by a social problem without feeling that I needed to do something about it. And for that reason, I've been active in quite a variety of areas. I'm not a single-issue person who rose, from the ground up to some level of importance in a particular area. I've just always felt I needed to help if I saw something that wasn't just or right. And going to law school gave me a whole new set of credentials for doing that, and was a very important step. But I didn't have a typical legal career because just being a lawyer was never really my motive.
Your list of causes is long and really important: civil rights, peace, anti-war, women's rights, gay rights, economic equality, immigrants' rights. So you talk in the book about how important it is for people to get involved in whatever issue you care about. I want to talk about that in a second, but it is safe to say there were a lot of issues you cared about.
Right.
And when it comes to being a lawyer and what you choose to work on now, how does that work for you typically?
Well, I'm retired now, so I'm not practicing law or in a full-time position of any kind. But it's worked very well. I mean, I was able to do things as a lawyer that I couldn't have done otherwise. And I also, of course, had that ability to become known in my community because I was doing a lot of legal work and social justice work. So I was able to run in two legislative races, once for the Vermont House and once for the Vermont Senate, losing both, not to anyone's surprise, including mine. I lived in a very conservative area of Vermont, but I was able to give people a voice in those elections. In one case, no Democrat had even bothered to run in the 8 years before the year that I ran. And so people had just been waiting for something to happen and somebody to come forward. And once I did, they could at least hold my opponent accountable and make them go on record as to what they believed and why. And the second time was when I ran for the Vermont Senate, and that was the year 2000, when Vermont had just passed civil unions legislation to allow gay couples to have the benefits and rights of marriage. And that was a fight that had split the state in half. And so the election was a lot of right-wing money on one side trying to defeat everybody who had voted for the legislation, which successfully passed, versus the people who were trying to save the legislation and make sure that this new right continued to exist in Vermont. And that was the side that prevailed. But it was a bitter fight, and it required somebody in every single part of the state, no matter how conservative and how unlikely they were to win, to be out there leading the charge and giving people the opportunity to make their voices heard.
I think this can be said about many states, but certainly Vermont. It is a very, as far as its economically and also politically, it's a very diverse state.
It is, and getting more so all the time. I mean, my work at the moment as a volunteer is with asylum seekers, and many of us who are doing this work are happy that one obvious aspect of it is that the state is getting increasingly diverse and therefore richer.
One of the things that you talk about in the book, I mean, Madeline Cunin, who was the governor, longtime governor of Vermont, wanted you to run for office. Bernie Sanders endorsed you. You were close with them, not as close with Howard Dean.
That's true. Howard, he had many good ideas and was particularly good on issues that involve childhood prevention or family prevention of major social or medical problems. But he was really more of a moderate than a progressive. And so I did split with him on a number of issues. I was serving as a lobbyist during his time in office, and I was representing the Vermont Low Income Advocacy Council. So low-income Vermonters were my constituents, and that was the reason I was there. And we did do battle. The governor was not generous with that population, and seem not really to have a good understanding of multi-generational poverty and how difficult it really is for people to break out of that barrier.
Talk a little bit about what you hope people get out of the book in the sense of, I mean, I love this, the subtitle of the book of Memoir of an Unknown Activist. So when you look at this, of being unknown, of what people can get done.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people think of an activist as the person up in front of the demonstration with a bullhorn in their hand making a major speech, but that, and that person is, of course, an activist, but there are so many other ways to be active, and they can start with just your work in your neighborhood or your community. Maybe there's more attention needed to space for young people or children to play, or it can be part of your paid employment. If you work for a social service agency or if you're an attorney, you can approach activism from your paid position. Or, of course, you can always run for office from local town office and school board, which, by the way, is where Governor Cunin got her start, on up through Congress, and if you want to aim for the White House, I guess you could do that too.
I guess once an activist, always an activist. I mean, you talk about being retired, and that's mostly from the lawyering, but you, I guess you never stop being an activist.
I don't think so. I mean, I suppose that at some point you get too tired to be an active activist, but if it's something that's hard to give up, especially if you've seen it make a difference and know how much it can mean to other people. I mean, it's something that changes entire lives, and that's not to be shuffled off.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is Politically Defined, Memoir of an Unknown Activist. Dinah Yesny, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me, Jill.
Thank you very much. Be well. Best of luck. Again, the name of the book is Politically Defined, Memoir of an Unknown Activist. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.